Meditation so far, and I never plan these things, just let the retreat evolve. Last night somebody asked in the question time about insight again, and is it the case you do so much samatha, then you do insight meditation? Are you supposed to do jhana first and then do insight? Or all this stuff about insight confuses the hell out of people. So because of that, today I'm going to talk about the place of insight and how we use that to overcome, first of all, the obstacles in meditation. Now, I mentioned last night that insight happens all the while we're meditating. Calm and insight always flow together. You cannot separate them at all. And I did mention the story of Sam and Vi and Metta the dog last night. But how Ajahn Chah used to say it, he would just hold up his hand. And he said, now you can see the front of my hand. But he said, I assure you, I promise you, the back is there as well. Only you can't see it. Now you can see the back of my hand. But the front is there. It's just that it's hidden by the back of the hand. Because you cannot separate the front and the back of the hand. Where there's a front, there's a back. Where there's a back, there's a front. Just like samatha vipassana, calm and insight. You can't separate them. Sure, you can have one in front and you think, I'm just doing front of the hand meditation, but the back is right there. And sometimes you think, I'm doing back of the hand meditation, but the front is still there. You can't separate them. And that was Ajahn Chah's simile, which he used many, many times when he was asked the same question. The insight and calm, they always go together. One may be slightly in front of the other, but the other one is right there behind it. And you will find already I've made that point when I say to get success in meditation, don't use willpower, use wisdom power, insight, understanding. Because the nature, the way that we have been taught and conditioned, if there's a problem, you just try harder. If you're failing your exams, you just work harder, spend more time in front of the books. If the screw just won't turn, you push harder. Whatever it is, we always end up putting more effort rather than more wisdom. And because of that, we usually get into very difficult situations. If it's the screw, we usually find out we're turning it the wrong way. I've done that many, many times with the electric screwdrivers. You find out, how come it's not loosening up? Because you've got it on the tighten mode instead of the loosen mode. And sometimes all you need to do is to stand back and what's going on? Why is there a problem? And wisdom is far more powerful than force, which is why in meditation, if the meditation's not working, don't try harder. You just get more suffering. Instead, stand back and contemplate. Use insight. Even in the tradition from which I come from, the Thai forest tradition, there's one of the very famous monks in that tradition, other than Ajahn Chah, was Ajahn Mahabua. And when I went to visit him once, just to check him out, because that's what you like doing, just to go and stay with people to see if they're the real deal or not. But he gave a talk, and it was in Thai. I understood perfectly what he was saying at that time. I understood Thai fluently. And he gave a talk which was self-deprecating. He was mentioning that when he was a young monk, he was with his teacher, this monk called Ajahn Mun, and he had a fever. He had a malaria fever, like most monks in those days had. It was just an occupational hazard for monks who lived in the jungle. And while he was having his malaria fever with a very, very high temperature, it came the time in the afternoon when the monks would do their chores, mostly sweeping. And instead of just lying down and resting, he decided to be the tough guy. And so he forced himself up in the middle of a big fever, picked up a broom, and shaking, started sweeping. Now, for many people, you think that's heroic. That's really tough. He's not going to give in to this fever. He's going to be stronger than this body. He's going to be just like the super monk. But as soon as his teacher saw this monk was actually doing this heroic thing of just sweeping, even though he was in the middle of a fever. the teacher Ajahn Mun, he really told Ajahn Mahabua off. He said, "You're not a Buddhist. That's not what Buddhists do. We don't fight things. We investigate them." And that was an important part of Ajahn Mahabua's training. You don't fight these things. You investigate them. Get to know them. Understand them. So you can get insight into them. And it's that wisdom which overcomes them. A few nights ago, you were mentioning, somebody asked me about this person called Mara. Mara is, you know, the number one enemy, so to speak. You know, the controller, the tempter. Very similar to, like, you know, a devil in Christianity. Always, you know, coming up and messing you around. And the way to overcome Mara, even when the Buddha, before he became enlightened, doesn't overcome Mara through force. I know you, Mara. I understand you. I understand what this controlling is. I understand what lust is. I understand what anger is. I understand what fear is. Understanding is what overcomes Mara. And so that if you have any problems in your life, but especially because we're on retreat here, in this retreat, don't fight, don't force, just stand back and contemplate. What is going on? What is happening? So, I don't know how your meditation has gone so far. How many of you are already fully enlightened? Put your hands up. So look, so are you really happy with the meditation so far? Some of you are, some of you aren't. Is every meditation a good one? How come? I'm giving all these amazing teachings. But sometimes that happens. This is just an example of, you know, the insight, because you will find that every now and again you get a very, very nice meditation, very peaceful, and you understand how to do it, and you think, wow, now I know how to do it. And then you get up and have a cup of tea, and you sit down, oh, here we go again. And it's hopeless, and it's terrible. You think, where's it all gone? I just did a good meditation, I understood how to do it, and now it doesn't work. And so a lot of times we get frustrated, and we try harder, we sit longer, and again we get more frustrated. So when that started to happen to me, I came up with this story. It's a story which is like a joke, because I laugh at myself, I laugh at life, especially laugh about meditation. It's a story of the man who went to work on a Monday. You know, he went to work, and he worked really hard all day, and at the end of the day, the boss gave him nothing. No pay packet, no sort of check, no wages, nothing. So he went back home, and his wife said, "How did you do?" He said, "Well, okay, but I didn't get paid today." But he went there again the next day, again worked really hard, and didn't get paid again. And so he told his wife when he came back home, "I don't want to go back there again. You work hard all day, and you don't get anything." He said, "No, I'll just go again. Who knows what might happen on Wednesday." So he went there on Wednesday. The same thing happened, didn't get paid. You know, he didn't really want to go to work on Thursday, but he had nothing else to do, so he went there, and the same thing happened. All day working, didn't get paid at all. And then his wife made him go there on Friday, even though he didn't really want to. What's the point? You don't get paid. He went there on Friday, and at the end of the working day, he got this big pay packet. And when he went home, he told his wife, "Yeah, I got paid today. From now on, I'm only going to work on Fridays." Now, do you understand how that relates to your meditation? I'm only going to do the nice meditations. I'm only going to meditate when I'm going to get paid. Not every meditation can be a payday. So all those other meditations, when you sit there and nothing happens, no nimittas, no joy or whatever, that's just like going to work on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You're building up credit. And as you build up credit more and more and more, eventually you get paid. So all of you who've yet to get paid, I guarantee the check is in the mail. Just keep on trying. So that really helped me, because then I realized, oh, you can't have every meditation a good one. No more you can get paid every day, just paid at the end of the week or the end of the month these days. So that's using some little insight. So we keep on meditating, and then you start figuring out, well, just what is the main hindrances? I know that those of you who've been to retreats before, who have read the books and learnt all the teachings, they always think the hindrances. Okay, the five hindrances, you know, sensory desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and doubt. Yes, but you know them, what they are in theory. What actually are they? Why are those hindrances? What's actually going on with the mind? Why is it so difficult to meditate sometimes? And one of the great insights, you know, which help you enormously, is keeping things very simple. You don't need to have a university degree to become enlightened. In fact, in the time of the Buddha, you know, some of these people hadn't got any education at all. Look at, you know, Ajahn Chah, 4 years at school, that's all he had. And he was much, much, much wiser than I was and most other people. That really shocked me. I thought, I'm going to sort of ask for a rebate from Cambridge University. They were supposed to make me smart, and this guy was far smarter than I was. So why? What's going on there? And I think one of the reasons was because we keep our minds so complicated, we think too much, we miss the obvious. And the obvious is, you know, I mentioned earlier, that one of the great insights in meditation, the thing which you can apply and it will really help increase the depth and peace of your meditation, is what I mentioned about the two types of meditation. Second Noble Truth Meditation and Third Noble Truth Meditation. Basic teaching of the Buddha. Craving leads to suffering. Letting go of craving leads to peace. Very, very simple. Which is why every time I get a block in my meditation, instead of just forcing it, I realize if that's a block, if my meditation is not getting peaceful, I remember that Second Noble Truth. I'm craving, I'm wanting something. I always look for, what am I wanting? What do I want? And of course, you know, sometimes it is hot. Sometimes it's cold. Sometimes your body aches. Sometimes there's noise. Sometimes, you know, you're sitting down here and people are banging the door and making all these noises and you think, gee, why can't people be more quiet? But that's wanting. You're wanting something you haven't got. And that stops you being peaceful. And of course, the insight, which I mentioned last night, it's not the noise that disturbs you. It's you who disturb the noise. Now, that opens up a huge amount of insight. A place where you can understand how so much the suffering in your life has come from. You are disturbing the world. It's not the world that disturbs you. The spiders in the forest, they said last night, they're not disturbing you. They belong in this forest. They were here long before you were. So you're actually disturbing the spiders. It's not that spiders are disturbing you. It's supposed to be a hot day today. Is the heat going to disturb you? Not if you don't disturb the heat. You can make peace with anything in life when you stop fighting it, investigate it, and make peace with it. And sometimes that people keep saying, oh, but it's so noisy, you can't meditate when it's so noisy. Of course you can if you don't disturb the noise. Now what do we mean by not disturbing the noise? It means, again, not fighting it, just understanding it, making peace with it. Some of you might see these t-shirts. I haven't actually seen one. Where have they all gone, Dania? The t-shirts, Make Peace, Be Kind, Be Gentle t-shirt.
There's a few. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, but anyway, that this was a little saying of mine, which is basic Buddhism, but it's just how you understand that you can meditate with anything, you don't disturb anything. Instead of fighting things, you make peace with them. You make peace with the heat. You make peace with the spiders. You make peace with your crazy mind. You make peace with your sleepiness. You don't fight it. Because if you fight it, that's wanting, and that causes suffering. All the time, whenever I suffer, I know what I've done. I've wanted something. Now I have made a problem out of the noise. I've disturbed it. And that's why I get the suffering and I lose all my peace. And the opposite way, you know, is that third noble truth meditation. You let it be. You make peace with it. You're kind to it. You're gentle with it. And that is my meditation in a nutshell. Whatever I experience, I make peace with it. I don't fight it. I'm kind to it. And I'm gentle with things. So when you're making peace, being kind, being gentle, you understand that is third noble truth meditation. You can do that anywhere, any place, with anything. So you've got, so you feel really sick today. You really feel low energy. Don't fight it, make peace with it. It's part of being a human being. Every now and again you get sick. Every now and again you get weak. Every now and again the body doesn't feel its best. So you make peace with it. Be one with it. Stop fighting it and wanting it to be different. It's amazing what happens if you make peace with things. It's no problem anymore. And be kind. It's beautiful kindness and compassion to your body and mind. So if you feel tired, go and lay down and take a nap. It's amazing just how many people feel so guilty. They feel so guilty, oh, I can't take a nap. It's on retreat, it's the middle of the day, I'm supposed to be putting forth effort. No, you're not. You're supposed to be understanding and being kind. I know there was one lady that she felt like crying. And so I gave her a crying license. So I put the crying license. You are hereby allowed to cry for any reason at any time, at any place, signed Ajahn Brahm. And I can do that for you if you want a sleeping license. I will give you a sleeping license. I hereby permit and put your name underneath. You know, say Dr. Chandra De Silva. So permission to sleep at any time, at any day, for any reason, whether she's tired or not. Because sometimes you have to do that to stop people feeling guilty. So instead, we're kind rather than guilty. And it's amazing, when you're kind to yourself, your body relaxes, your mind relaxes, all the tension disappears, all the force goes. And then you get very peaceful and very still and deep meditation. You're getting insight into how to meditate. And you're very gentle. Like, a lot of times when people, when they ask for meditation instructions, they keep on saying, well, what should I watch? Should I watch the breath? Where should I watch the breath? How should I watch the breath? Should I sort of watch a kasina? Should I do walking meditation? Should I watch the belly? Should I watch the feelings in the body? Do I sweep? Should I do that? That just, it doesn't matter at all what you do. What you're doing, what you're watching, I don't care at all. But I do really care how you're watching it. It doesn't matter whether you're watching the breath, the feelings in the body, you're doing walking meditation, sitting meditation, or what you're doing, but how you're doing it is an important part of meditation. Whatever you're experiencing, make sure you're making peace with it. You're being kind. You're being gentle. So, you've got one of the great hindrances in meditation, sloth and torpor. And I see many people have sloth and torpor. Many of their heads right now. That's why that sometimes when you really get sleepy, you start nodding. And as you start nodding, I often thought we should actually, Daniel, buy a couple of crash helmets. So those ones have got really a nodding problem. We can make sure they don't fall and hit their head into the Buddhist society. Especially if we're sitting on the chair. That's why I said the other day, it'd be good to get seat belts on some of the chairs. So if you really are very sleepy and nodding, you won't fall off. But what is sloth and torpor? And a lot of times people feel so guilty about being sleepy. And so they fight and make themselves more tense. I had to battle with sloth and torpor as a monk in Thailand. And we used to get up 3 o'clock in the morning, every morning, although it was optional. You could always get up at 2:30 or 2 o'clock if you wanted to, but not after 3. And there was no coffee or tea in the kitchen or whatever. It's straight up, straight into the hall to meditate, really early in the morning. And I was always really sleepy. And you used to try all these tricks to try and overcome your sloth and torpor, but you find out that these tricks, they were all forceful tricks. The first thing you used to do, you know, the old matchbox trick. You know, you've seen me probably demonstrate this before. You take a matchbox and take the cover off, and so you've just got the tray with all the matches in. So if, you know, your head dropped, you know, the matches would fall on the floor. And so that's actually giving you mindfulness, giving you feedback if you were sleepy. And it only took 2 or 3 days, and then, you know, the matchbox didn't fall on the floor anymore. And I thought, hey, I've conquered my sloth and torpor. Until one of the mugs came up and they said, I've just been watching you and I've figured out why your matchbox doesn't fall. Because, you know, in the old days you'd be nodding like this. Now he said, you're doing this. And I didn't realize that's what I was doing, but it's amazing just what your body does, and it tricks you all the time. So that never worked. One of the other monks, so Ajahn Chakra, used to put a pin between his 2 fingers. So you know, if it sort of, he got sleepy, it would actually prick him and draw blood sometimes. But that never worked. You kept on trying that, and you were still sleepy. There were times when I thought, okay, let's really watch the breath. And I use all my willpower. And actually, I have got very strong willpower if I want to use it. But you know, I find it just a pain in the backside doing willpower. It's much better using wisdom power. So I really screwed up my mind and just watched every breath. And you forced your way through the sloth and torpor. What I found, as soon as the sloth and torpor, the dullness had gone, then it was full of restlessness. I couldn't stop thinking. And so I calmed the thinking down, and then I fell asleep again. And to me, it was just like the pendulum with too much thinking or dullness, and you can never find that middle way in between. And so what I then did, I used wisdom power. I just stood back and said, what's going on? And then I soon figured out, number one, you know, I was sleep deprived. I wasn't getting enough hours on the bed. 4.5 hours I was trying to get away with, and that was not enough for a young man. So number one, I was sleep deprived. Number two, I was in a climate I was not used to. Just on my back here, there's a little stamp saying made in England. I'm not used to tropical climates. You know, it's humid, it was hot. No wonder you were sleepy. And number three, I was malnourished, because the food there was really disgusting. So when I thought about that, I thought, look, even if the Buddha had been born in England, sleep-deprived and malnourished, he'd have fallen asleep as well. It was just cause and effect. It was nature. You know what happened? There was one occasion when I went to do some visas down in Bangkok, and I was staying in a temple called Wat Bawon, and they had just built a new accommodation for visiting monks, so could stay in there. And a part of that accommodation, they had a lecture hall, which was air-conditioned. And we got permission to use it early in the morning, you know, 3 o'clock until dawn. And all my sloth and torpor disappeared. I could meditate there, and all the other monks meditated in there with no tiredness at all. We still didn't have much sleep. We did have better food in Bangkok. But it was the aircon which took away all the sloth and torpor. And I realized this is not a fault in me. It was not that I didn't know how to meditate. It was just cause and effect. It was just nature. So a lot of times you can use force, you can use willpower, and you're really, really stupid. But what you really need is to, you know, change your posture, go and sit in a cooler place, have a bit of a rest, have some more food or whatever to give yourself a bit of a physical boost, and then all that sloth and torpor doesn't come. And that was just a revelation. It's obvious. But I thought at first, no, sloth and torpor is a personal fault. It's because I'm not mindful enough, that I should put forth more effort. I should be smarter. I should be more energy or whatever. And I realized, no, it's all cause and effect. You find out why. Why are you sleepy? And a lot of time it is because you didn't have a good night's sleep last night for one reason. You know, you woke up in the middle of the night, there was a noise or something. And that woke you up, or you're not in a sort of good physical state. Something's going on in your body. And so if you're smart, you go and take a rest. Now, I challenge you. Because often in these retreats, people come up and say they're having a very difficult day. And this technique has worked with 100% success rate for such people. They come in the interview and say, look, I've been struggling all day, I think I should leave. You know, I'm not getting anywhere in my meditation. And I give them this wonderful technique, which always works. I say, go back to your room and take a nap. I can't take a nap, I've slept too much already. Go to your room and take a nap. No alarm clock, sit down, or lay down and just fall asleep. Whatever time you wake up, you wake up. And when you wake up, take a shower. You can take the showers now. And then make a cup of tea or orange juice, whatever you want. And then come and meditate. You know, just all the time they come back after and say, that was the best meditation I've had so far. I say, why? It's because you relaxed. You did need a bit of sleep. And a nice shower, a nice cup of tea or coffee, whatever you like. And then you looked after your body, you were kind to it. And then when you meditate, it's like your mind says, oh, you were kind to me. Now I'm going to be kind back to you. And it gives you a beautiful meditation. It was amazing just how that very simple technique works. Why? There's insight, understanding how your body works and how your mind works. It's understanding this body and mind doesn't belong to you. It's not your slave. You can't order it around with willpower and expect it to do what you want. Kindness, making peace, being gentle, that works. And especially that kindness. In some meditation retreats, the kindness is totally forgotten. Not in this retreat. Hopefully that, you know, you come off this retreat and it's not Ajahn Brahma's being soft on you, but being kind on you. And Dani is being kind and Bianca's being kind. So trying to make you kind to yourself and being kind to the other people who you live with. Because if you're kind to the people you share your cottage with, and you're kind to this body in which you live, maybe you can be kind to your mind as well. So if you're not getting anywhere in the meditation, just get your hand, as it were, and just stroke your mind. There, it's okay, mind. Shh. You don't have to be enlightened on this retreat. You don't have to even sort of be able to watch the breath. You can fall asleep and think weird sexual fantasies. It's all right with me. Okay, mind, you're okay. You'd be surprised just how that little bit of kindness to your own mind, letting it be, just quiz the course with some very wonderful deep meditation. Often if I get a blockage in meditation, that's actually the two things which I do to overcome hindrances in meditation. Is first of all, sharpen up my present moment awareness. Because sometimes, you know, that you tend to sort of blur the present moment. You're a tiny bit in the future, a tiny bit in the past. So always check, am I in the present moment? Because all the cravings and desires and all the work is in the future or the past. I say, I come back into this moment right here, this moment is all I've got anyway, so I'm at peace with this moment. And the other thing I usually do is some kindness. However I'm feeling right now, whatever's happening, I'm just totally kind to it. Totally opening the door of my heart to this moment, no matter what it is. I don't care if I'm supposed to be a senior monk and just a teacher of meditation and wellness. I don't care. If I'm tired, I'm kind enough to let myself be tired. In this moment, I let myself be. I open the door of my heart to all my stupidity and my craziness and my dullness and my restlessness, whatever's happening, I can be. When you do things like that in meditation, straight away the mind gets very peaceful and very deep, almost immediately. I'm using wisdom power because the block was that little bit of ill will, not wanting to be here. Mentioned earlier that most people, they may not be meditators, just ordinary people, maybe any religion or no religion. Most people have had these very peaceful and beautiful experiences in their life. There are times of deep peace, times of contentment, times of just being so happy to be in that moment. And I ask people to remember that and use that for insight. Right now, what's the most peaceful experience you've ever had in your whole life? Where was it? When was it? How did you feel when you felt so at ease, at one with things? We didn't really want anything. Yeah, you had other problems in your life afterwards, but in that moment it was like there was no problems at all. Nothing to do, perfectly content. Just really happy just to be there. What did it feel like? And more importantly, why? You can understand now that is like the state of meditation. Totally happy to be here. Totally content. Not wanting anything in the whole world. This is good enough. Isn't that a beautiful experience? Now, recreate it right now. In Jhana Grove, on this little cushion, in this moment. To make this moment where you want to be. So right now in this moment there's nothing I want in the whole world. I don't want jhanas. I don't want nimittas. I don't want to get in deep meditation. I don't want to beat my personal best. I don't want to have all my problems sorted out. I don't want to get all my stupidity and all my psychotic behavior sort of eradicated. Psychotic behavior, I love you. And be totally at peace with who you are right in this moment. Can you do that? Now you know how to meditate. It's not the psychotic behavior disturbs you. It's you who disturb your own psychotic behavior. Now that's using great. Now, this is weird because people say, well, that means if you don't do anything, you won't, you know, develop, you won't sort of better yourself, nothing will happen. But actually, it does change things. With that love and with that acceptance, with that making peace with things, that wise way of dealing with all of the hindrances of meditation in one fell swoop, just being kind to them, making peace with them, being gentle with them, just being content to be stupid. Then that contentment, all the hindrances vanish. Mara, I know you. You see it. And all those hindrances, they totally vanish straight away. All your psychosis disappears. All your grief, all your problems, they're not problems anymore. They're just there. And you make peace with them. You're kind to them. You're gentle. And then you get incredibly peaceful. You just maintain that for a short while. And then it's amazing what happens. And the reason is this. This is the insight into how your mind works. And I have skirted around this, but this is the core teaching of how your mind works. There are two halves of your mind. I call one the passive mind, that which can hear me, that which can feel the body, that which can see the writing you're putting down on the paper. That is the passive mind. We can call it mindfulness or consciousness if you like. I don't care what you call it. Just to give it a new name, I call it the knower, that which knows. That which you can hear, feel, that which you can even know what you're thinking. That's the passive mind. It receives information. The other part of your mind is the active mind. It's the doer. That which decides to scratch its nose. That which thinks. That which decides it's going to have one sugar in the tea or two sugars, that which decides where you're going to go next and how you're going to meditate. You know that active mind, the doer. Now those are the two halves of the mind. And in the human being, most of your mental energy goes into the doer, the active mind. You're always thinking, planning, even when you're meditating, you're doing something. And because you do so much, especially outside in the world, you've got so much business to perform, so many duties, so many lists of things to complete, the doing mind takes all of your energy until hardly anything is left for knowing. That's one of the reasons why people get depressed. They do so much, they struggle so much, there's no energy left for knowing. and they get into this dull state where just colors are just pastel, they're all washed out, even food just tastes no taste to it at all, because their mindfulness, they know it's got hardly any energy left at all. They can't get out of bed, they can't do anything, and life doesn't, has got no flavor, no taste to it. And that's the dull mind, which is depression. If ever you do have depression, make peace with it. Don't fight it. Enjoy. I say, like, milk depression for all it's worth. It's great. When you're depressed, you don't have to go to work, so you can stay in bed all day. Oh, it's brilliant. Stay in bed, I don't have to go to work. People actually feed me. I don't have to do anything. So if you are depressed, enjoy it. Make the most out of it. Because then when you relax with it and are still with it, the energy starts going back into the doer. So it starts going back into the knower. You're not doing anything. It goes back into the knower. That's exactly the same with sloth and torpor. You're dull because there's hardly any energy left in knowing. And what do most people do? What do I used to do? Okay, there's not much energy left in the passive mind to know what's going on. So I would fight. So I'd be wasting precious energy on doing things. When I realized these two halves of the mind and how they work, whenever I was dull, I totally made peace with it. I didn't fight it at all. I decided I could not waste energy when I was dull. So I was perfectly still, not fighting, just making peace and being kind to my dullness. And then, because I was not wasting mental energy, the mental energy started going back into the knower. Until the knower got bright enough, bright and bright and bright, then there was no more sloth and torpor. Very similar to the misty morning when the sun comes up, it just burns off the mist and it becomes clear again. That was the experience. When I fought sloth and torpor or dullness, because I was wasting energy, I didn't have much energy anyway, soon that just, you know, it just lasted too long. So understand those two halves of the mind, the knower and the doer. In meditation, we are not feeding the doer. We're actually restraining the doer. We're not reacting. We're not disturbing the noise. We're not disturbing the sloth and torpor. We're not disturbing the restlessness in our mind. We're not disturbing anything. We're just watching, not fighting, investigating, just being. And because we're not doing anything, that is why the mental energy starts going into the knower. You become more alert, more awake, more energized, more happy. And that's a path of meditation. It's a great insight into how meditation works. Your mindfulness increases. And I said, what happens? The bricks look more interesting. The floor, you can see more color in the floor. And it's just incredible, the browns and the golds and the oranges in the floor. And this is just an ordinary wooden floor. And you go outside into those lawns or see those stupas or go and look at the forest in the distance. That's gorgeous. Is Jhana Grove a beautiful place? It would actually get more beautiful the longer you stay here. And it's nothing to do with the scenery, but everything to do with your mind. And you've had a very peaceful meditation. It's just glorious outside. But if you are dull, if you're upset, if you are sort of got all your problems, you can't even see the forest. You're too dull. So when you stop feeding the doer, you let things be. Just make peace, be kind, be gentle, don't do anything. Energy starts going into mindfulness. Things look more beautiful, you get happier. But also you can actually see more of what's going on in your mind. You see these little hindrances as they come up. You see the way that you always try and control things. Sometimes you're afraid of things. Sometimes you're upset with things. You see that, so stop it. And you can let go much more, the more awake you are. Which means you can get more peaceful, more deep. And that is what happens. People get so peaceful, so deep, the energy just starts going into knowing. You really get blissed out. all those ecstasy states of meditation, when you're sitting there just having such a wonderful time, that's all the energy which would have been wasted in thinking and rushing around and fighting things. All that is now just staying in one place in the mind, building up this incredible energy. Oh, this is nice. The bliss states are high energy states. So that's why sometimes when somebody asks me the question, sometimes I'm walking meditation, I feel like dancing. Yeah, I know what you feel like, dance. You got so much energy, you're bubbly. Go for it. Because that's just what you feel like doing. Full of lots and lots of joy and energy. So the point is here, it's not what you're watching, watching the breath, watching this, it's how you're watching it. Make sure you're not doing too much. In fact, not doing anything is the best. So that all the energy is going into knowing. So if you're sick, if you're sleeping in the room, if you're doing the chores in the kitchen prior to the lunch or whatever, you can always meditate no matter what you're doing, as long as you're making peace, being kind, being gentle. You're not fighting things. You're not trying to get things. You're not trying to change things. You're not disturbing the world. You're just making peace with it, being kind and being gentle. And then you find the meditation works. I always thought that to meditate you have to watch the breath, or you have to watch something. And so I'd always been asking the teachers, you know, what should I watch? But I forgot to ask, how do I watch it? And it's the how you watch things is more important than what you watch. And so sometimes it's very hard to teach people, because sometimes they're just so thick, I think the word is. It takes a long time to get through all this layers and layers of conditioning. That's what I mean by thick. So the old joke was that sometimes when they come and I teach them breath meditation, and when breath meditation doesn't work, that's when I teach them Anapanasati. And if they can't do Anapanasati, then I teach them a loving kindness meditation. If they can't do loving kindness meditation, then I teach them Metta meditation. For those of you who don't know, Anapana means breath. Metta means loving kindness. If they can't do loving kindness meditation, I teach them letting go meditation. If they can't do letting go meditation, I teach them samatha. If they can't do samatha meditation, then I teach them calm. If they can't do calm, I teach them vipassana. If they can't do vipassana, I teach them insight meditation. And if they can't do insight meditation, I go back to anapanasati. By that time, they forgot that's where they started. It's just a trick. It's all the same. There's no difference, no matter what meditation technique you use. The important part is how you do vipassana, how you do metta, how you do breath meditation, how you do anything. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Don't fight the world. Out there, when you're doing a job, fine, fight. Because that's what you're paid for. But in this retreat, no fighting. Don't fight the people in your room. Don't fight yourself. Don't fight your mind. Don't fight the weather. Don't fight the spiders. Make peace with them. Don't get angry at anything in this world. Don't get angry at yourself because you've been totally hopeless. 3 or 4 days, and what have you done so far? Complete waste of time, isn't it? No. Don't get angry at yourself. Be kind to yourself. Oh, there, it's okay. And be totally kind to your stupid mind. And be just so gentle. It's how you meditate. It's more important than what you're meditating on. And so sometimes as a teacher, people say, I saw this nimitta, beautiful nimitta. But, I look at them and say, no, that's, you're just forcing it. You're holding that nimitta because you can see on their face they're just so tense. Yeah, they've got nimitta coming up, but they're not enjoying it. They're getting nowhere. They said, that's wrong meditation. I'd rather have someone who's falling asleep. And every meditation, they start snoring. I'd rather have someone like that than a control freak. Because there's this great story, and this is from the Sanyutta Nikaya. No, sorry, it's in the Majjhima Nikaya. The Buddha was going with his attendant Ananda, and he saw this monk sitting on the edge of the forest, perfectly straight. Full lotus, straight back, right hand over left hand, thumbs touching, just head slightly down. perfectly still. They're like what you think is a perfect meditation posture. He turned around to Ananda and said, I'm worried about that monk. Sure enough, a few weeks later, that monk had disrobed and got married. And then he went deep into the forest and he saw a monk who was sleeping and nodding. And the Buddha turned to Ananda and smiled, I'm not worried about him. A few weeks later, he became fully enlightened with the psychic powers. So all of you would be nodding. A few days later, you'd be perfectly enlightened. And of course, when you first read something like that, you think, what's going on? That doesn't make any sense. Surely that person with a straight back, he's putting energy and effort into his meditation. He's the fellow who would achieve something, because I always thought that you have to put effort in to achieve things in life. But that's not what the Buddha said. The guy there who was letting go, he was the one who was going to get enlightened. And I know that from personal experience too, because there was one French monk who I lived with for about 3 or 4 years. Whenever he'd meditate, he would never nod. He'd always have a perfect posture, even though we meditated all night sometimes. And he was very quiet. And we all thought amongst ourselves, as you do, you talk amongst yourselves, think, wow, he must have some incredible meditation. No one has ever seen him nod, not once. And after 3 years, he disrobed. And we were all just so shocked. We thought you were just that close to enlightenment. And he said, no, no. He said, sometimes, you know, I'd open my eyes and see monks like you, Ajahn Brahm, sleeping, slumped over, and I was so jealous. I thought, if only I could do that. Because he was such a control freak, he would never allow himself to actually to go to sleep. He never allowed himself to relax. He was so tight and tense for 3 years. And when I heard that, my heart sank. That poor man. The amount of suffering he went through to, and his endurance for 3 years, trying to control his body and control his mind. He said, I was jealous of all the other monks who could let go, I just couldn't do it. He was control freak. So, you know, that story of the Buddha, I understand, because I have personal experience of that. So don't be the control freak. If you feel like falling asleep, fall asleep. Don't fight. Otherwise you get so tense, you get suppressed, and all that terrible psychological stuff would eventually happen. Please let go, be loose, be kind. I remember giving a talk over in Netherlands to this business group once. And afterwards, one of these executives came up to me and said, I've been looking at you during your talk. I noticed just how often your robe falls off. And he said, that's exactly who you are, Ajahn Brahm. You're so loose, you let go so much. And she said, that she was brought up in a Catholic convent. And all those nuns were so tight, nothing could ever fall off. Now, what sort of person do you want to be? What type of meditator do you want to be? Do you want to be tight? Suppressed? Fighting? Or do you want to be loose and free? I'm not talking about your robes. I'm talking about your mind. Happiness, peace, letting go. You fight and you get collateral damage. You make peace and the whole world stops. You relax and you go deep. The energy goes into the mindfulness. You wake up and you can let go even more. And you get incredibly so still. And you realize that that's how you meditate. You don't force, you don't fight, you literally are opening up your hand. When you're still, the mango falls. It's nature. That's how this path works. Fight and it never falls. Make peace. Be kind. Be gentle. No matter what state of mind you're in, you can always do that. That's called meditation. That uses insight and calm. And kindness all together. So those are your instructions. Remember that. Just make peace, be kind, be gentle. So simple, but incredibly effective. And all your obstacles overcome. Any hindrance, just make peace with it. Be kind to it. Be gentle with it.
And that's the way forward. Fight and you just feed Mara. Okay, so that's a talk about how to use insight to overcome the hindrances in meditation. Have a wonderful time. So, any questions about this morning's talk? Insight all the way into Nibbana. Question? Going? Going? Gone. Okay, so off you go. Make peace. Be kind. Be gentle. See what happens.